ब्रह्मचिन्त्यं च सूत्रस्थम् अचलं ध्रुवम् संयमेन्द्रियग्रामं सर्वत्र समबुद्धयः ते प्राप्नुवन्ति मामेव सर्वभूतहितेरतः. But those who fully worship the unmanifested, that which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed and immovable, the impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth, by controlling the various senses and being equally disposed to everyone, such persons, engaged in the welfare of all, at last achieve me. Hare Krishna, Kudus Mahaji.
Hare Krishna.
So, I shall try to speak something on this verse, on the purport, or some little things I've come across on this subject matter. Chapter begins with Arjuna asking Krishna, which is more, who are more perfect? Those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, that means your bhaktas, who are always engaged in loving devotional service to Krishna, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested. So Krishna quite clearly tells his opinion in the second verse. Although there is still so much debate, you know, as to whether one should worship the impersonal form of the Supreme Lord or the personal form. So Krishna says quite directly in the next. So again, the question is whether who is more perfect? The one who worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? That means the personal form, engaged in devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, that means light or jyoti, no, things like that. That means something that is not manifest. Krishna says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, those who fix their minds on my personal form and are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be most perfect. So this is Krishna's opinion. And Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he has given his opinion. It's good for us to just accept his opinion. But Krishna continues. What happens to those who do not worship his personal form? He says, no, in this verse he says, but those who fully worship the unmanifested, that which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed and immovable, the impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth. Right? What happens to them? Krishna is, in a way, gives some encouragement first. You know, he says, such persons engaged in the welfare of all at last achieve me. So there is still a chance. Well, everyone has a chance. So similarly, those engaged in impersonal worship also, you know, Krishna says that after many births, the man of wisdom seeks refuge in me, knowing that Vasudev is all. So just before that, you know, this will be a repeat to many of us, many of you. Let's go back into the different conceptions of the Absolute Truth or God. When we say God, we talk about the Absolute Truth, one who is on the absolute plane. There is no relativity in Him. That means absolute. He remained God then, He remains God now, and He remains God in the future. There is no time. He never ceased to be God. So He is absolute truth. He has no designation, no upadhi. He is not an Indian God, neither is He a Chinese God, nor is He a Muslim God, anything like that. God is God, right? And God has different names. Different people, based on time, place and circumstances, different persons from the spiritual world come here to give to the masses, to instruct the masses who have forgotten about God, who have rebelled against God. They have come to make them remember their lost relationship with God. So you have, you know, from different place, time and circumstances, they call Him by different names. Allah, Yehovah, Krishna. So there are different names, but we are all referring to the same person. So this we have to understand. So we are not referring to an Indian God or a Muslim God or a Chinese God. Everyone, all are God's servants. Regardless of color, regardless of the country you are born, regardless of the education you have, all of us are God's servants. So there are, this God or Absolute Truth can be viewed from three different angles of vision. Right? In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated this. Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yat jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti satyate. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth, that means God, call this non-dual substance, it's referred to as substance here, Brahman, Paramatma or Bhagavan. So God can be realized in three different forms or three different realizations of God different persons may have. You follow me, sir? So you have different conceptions of God. And some persons are only able, because you know of how much developed they are, right? They may be able to accept up to the impersonal conception of God. Others, the impersonal conception of God, you know, we say God is light, or God doesn't have a form, because we have a form, and we think, well, let's not go into that. Many people accept that God has no form. You know, the Muslims, the Christians, many faiths don't accept that God has a form, formless. So that is one realization of God. Slightly higher than that, you have Paramatma realization. That's another angle. From another angle of vision, right, God can be seen or realized as that person who is residing in the heart. So he is known as Paramatma. No, we always say, your conscience, Krishna or God is in the heart. God is in everyone's heart. God is in my heart. But many of us say, but we have not actually realized that God is actually in our heart. God is not only in our hearts, God is in everyone's heart. And also in every atom He has expanded. And so God has expanded that way. And he has taken a form as Paramatma, as is a Vishnu form. So, and then there is a third form called Bhagavan. Bhagavan means one who is full in six opulences. So, the Bhagavan conception means he has a form, something that is difficult for many to accept. Why? Because all of us earth had forms, and we have seen what happens to those with forms. Those with forms, what happens to them? We all know we are suffering in this material world, or at least we can see there is a lot of suffering in this world. We may not have realized that we are the four basic sufferings we may not have realized, which is birth, death, old age, disease. Although this is the basic suffering that everyone goes through, many of us actually fail to realize this. But we know of other sufferings. Sufferings caused by other living entities, sufferings caused by our own mind and our own body, and sufferings caused by higher living entities, or, you know, nature, we say. Actually, all of us are suffering this birth, death, old age, and disease. So that is why we say so, and anyone who has a body has to suffer. So if we say God also has a body, everyone finds it difficult to accept. So that is why there is this class of transcendentalists. Transcendentalists means those who are not, that means who have transcended this material conception of life. All of us are living a material conception of life, which means we are identifying with our body. The first lesson in spiritual life, right, spiritual life, not religious life, but spiritual life, is to understand that we are not this body. So transcendentalists, is this the first thing that they ask, who actually am I? So when they realize that I'm not this body, I'm actually something else, I'm spirit. Everyone understands, I'm spirit soul and I'm not this body. Or many people can understand. Actually, I had a rude awakening at the last book fair. So someone who has been actually seeking the truth, seeking for the absolute truth, you know, he has been to seminars or has spoken to Buddhist monks and different religious groups. So, and when he came to our book table, our stall, he asked us, so what's our philosophy? So, you know, I gave him the standard thing. I said, no, the first lesson is we are not, we have to first understand that we are not this material body, we are spirit souls. And that's the first lesson that is given in this Bhagavad Gita. So only then, this is something above some religious concept. So he said, but all religions say that. Everyone is saying, you are not the body, you are spirit soul. And then I just... It just shut me up for a while. Because many a times, we say these things, you know, we repeat, yeah? We faithfully repeat without the realization. So when someone says some more realization than you, so suddenly gives you an answer, then you don't know what's next. What's supposed to come out from your mouth next. So actually, what our movement is trying to do is make us realize this point. Not just say it, but actually try and realize. That's the most important thing. You know, try and realize. So our activities, whether it's class or different activities that we have in Krishna consciousness, is basically to help you realize this point that you are not this body but spirit soul. Actually, it's more than that. All transcendentalists, that means not only the bhaktas, not only us, all transcendentalists, whether it's the Mayavadis or all transcendentalists, they have accepted they are not spirit souls. But that's where the difference is. Many of them accept that they are spirit souls. But is that enough? That's the question. Is accepting that you are spirit soul enough? So, the those who accept the impersonal form, they are also transcendentalists. That means they are not after some material happiness. They actually rejected this material happiness because they see whatever, as long as I'm connected with something material, that is only I'm only getting suffering. So they want to reject these things. They want to reject. That's what they do. But And so by rejecting, they have accepted, oh God, this person, the supreme person, actually does not have a form. So that's their conception. And this is what was taught by different personalities from the spiritual world, because they teach based on what we can understand. So it is not their fault, it's our fault. Meaning, at different places, times and circumstances, depending on how developed we are for spiritual understanding, that much these personalities will give. You follow what I'm saying, sir? So we have these three conceptions. So Bhagavan means Bhagavan. One, the highest conception is this Bhagavan realization. Realization means that God has actually a form. So God has a form, and many people cannot understand. And we are not saying God has a form just because we think so, or we think it is nice to have a form, but because Shastra says so. And Krishna, this is Bhagavad Gita, and very authoritative Vedic scripture. And who spoke this Bhagavad Gita? Krishna speaks to Arjuna. For the benefit of all mankind. And he says, and he has expressed his opinion that the personal form of worship, worshipping the personal form of the Absolute Truth, which is worshipping him, right, as a person, is the highest form of worship. It is better than the impersonal form. So his expansion, that is what we know, that is what is Paramatma in the heart. He expands himself. When the material world is created, he expands for the material creation, and then expands again and enters into everybody and every atom. This is something technical, but so this, when he himself expands and goes into the heart, that is the meaning of, that is the Paramatma realization. So and there are three types of transcendentalists who have these three different types of realization. The bhaktas, that means the devotees, the pure devotees, they are the ones who have this Bhagavan realization. That means they accept the Supreme Personality, the Absolute Truth, to have a form. The yogis are those who try to become perfect in the eight different siddhas, to become lighter than the lightest, to become heavier than the heaviest, to be to be able to move faster than the mind, different siddhis they are trying to achieve. So this is one method of trying to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead, attain the Absolute. So the thing is, it is not that there are three different conceptions and the three different conceptions are separate, but actually all three conceptions are there. The bhaktas, those who are performing devotional service and who have accepted what Shastra says in that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a form, they can understand not only has he a form that we can worship, they also accept and they can understand and they have realized, or at least have understood theoretically, that person, when he expands, right, for the purpose of this creation of this material world, he enters into everyone's heart as Paramatma. So that is the second conception, right? So, but the yogis, their conception do not go beyond this Paramatma. And the third conception are those who cannot accept. So, and the Lord, or rather, from the Lord and from the Lord's abode comes this jyoti, this light emanating from Goloka Vrindavan, from the original planet of Krishna. So that is the light that the impersonalists worship as the supreme, as the supreme. So for them, they cannot understand anything higher than that. But that doesn't mean Bhagavan doesn't exist. That doesn't mean Paramatma exists. It's just that they are only able to understand up to that. Fair enough. Krishna says, no, fair enough. What happens to such persons? Such persons engage in the welfare of all, at last they will achieve me. Provided they meet either when they get Krishna's mercy or when they get Krishna's, a devotee of Krishna's mercy. When they meet the pure devotee, when they are able to come in touch with pure devotees, then they may have a change in mind. Some of now the example that Srila Prabhupada gives in this connection, he gives analogies. Two analogies I've come across. One is this, you know, Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. So they are akin to, you have sunshine. So, you know, during the daytime when we are in the room, we can see light everywhere. So we can, you know, one person will say, we can realize, we can see, we can perceive that there is light everywhere. Correct? But the slightly more intelligent person, he will go and look where this light is coming from. And he will notice, it is coming from the sun globe. The sun planet, sun globe, that's where the light is coming from. Right? So both are emanating light, correct? So in one sense both are the same. That means the sunlight that you are able to perceive while you are in the room, you know, when daylight comes, right? That is sunlight. So you are able to perceive, good. But the more intelligent person, you ask, where is this sunlight coming from? So he goes outside and sees, it's coming from the sun, this sun globe, you know, that is this bright thing you see outside. Right? But then, those who refer to Vedic scriptures, who want to go more into detail, who want to know more, right? They realize from the scriptures that actually there are personalities living in this sun globe that we see. But we cannot see for ourselves, but there are in this sun globe, there are personalities living there. And these people who are living there, headed by this river swan, right, they have bodies that are made up of fire. So as a result, what happens? They are also emanating light. Right? So all three forms emanate light. Right? So what we see is basically, does it mean that so those who can understand that river swan and all the other personalities in the sun planet, they are giving out light. So that light is, so that means the whole sun planet is full of light, so much glow is there. And that glow, this overwhelming glow, it reaches all the way until here. So they realize in three different forms, they don't see any difference, can you follow me? Right? But that person who refused to even come out of the room, no, wants to remain in darkness, there is light. So they do not know more. Or maybe they may not be developed enough to want to know more. Similarly, right, that is for those who, you know, like I was saying before, you know, based on time, place and circumstances, different personalities come and they have given shastra, they have given instructions and conceptions of God, right? And over time, let's say, there are other scriptures which give more detail, like the Vedic scriptures, they give more detail about this light, about this absolute truth, about God. Especially in the olden days, you know, whether in India or in Singapore, when we had finished our A-levels or degree, right, and we want to go for further studies, right, where do we go? We go to a country which gives further studies in specializing in that area, am I right? So we are willing to go somewhere else to get more knowledge about that subject matter. Correct or wrong? So similarly, if a person, you know, he knows something about God, as in, you know, he's got the impersonal form, but he also acknowledges or comes across other scriptures, right, that gives more explanations or more details about this person, about this absolute truth, right, that he actually has a form. Not only that, what he does every day, the interactions that he has with his devotees, all this in more detail. And that person decides, hey, actually I want to learn that. What is wrong with that? So such persons should be encouraged. At the same time, those persons who do not, who think that is enough, should they be disturbed? No. We let them, leave them alone. Right? And what we can do, of course, you know, if they are open, if they are willing to hear, we can say something, you know, everything we leave it to the mercy of Krishna. So if we come across, we can speak something, but we will leave it at that. No, if we have some books with us, we may give some books. So, and we leave it at that. But that doesn't mean. So what I'm trying to say, what Srila Prabhupada was trying to tell his audience, you know, when he related this, is, you know, just because all of you are coming from different backgrounds, that doesn't mean you be condescending towards this Vedic scriptures. Don't neglect it. Give it a chance. Look through it. You know, it doesn't hurt to go look through it, and then you find, oh, there is actually more to God than just, you know, this impersonal conception that I know of. And when you do read, when you do go in and find out, you know, just like, you know, another example is the jar. You know, you've got this jar of honey. Unless you open it, and put your fingers or take a spoon or whatever and taste it, you'll never know all you know is honey is sweet. You've known honey is sweet, but there is so much different type of honey, you know. And you do not know the particular taste of this particular honey. So unless you open and taste it for yourself, how would you know? So this means that, you know, especially, you know, I'm encouraging those who are new, who have come here, to give this Krishna consciousness movement a chance. Read the books, come and hear. Find out what this movement has to offer. Don't discriminate. Don't just write us off. That's what I'm trying to say. Don't write us off. Yes, for a long, you know, unfortunately, somehow many have written us off. But you have not given us a chance. There may be so much that you can learn from this movement. This movement has so much to offer. And the only way is to give us a chance. Come, hear, read, come and associate with devotees. Find out for yourself. Why listen to others? People may say, you know, it's a cult, it's this, it's that. No, come and experience for yourself. This is our challenge. Not challenge as in challenge, but this is what we tell you, you know, come and experience for yourself. Many who have come with an open mind, they have benefited. We are not asking for money. Everyone can come. So this analogy of the sun, the personalities in the sun planet, the sun globe, and the sun shine. So you understand that, you know, this is what Srila Prabhupada, this is the analogy that Srila Prabhupada gives all the time. That means if we are talking about the same absolute truth, you know, wearing different glasses from different angles, that's all. Right? And depending on our level of understanding, we'll be able to understand that much about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Krishna says, if they get Krishna's mercy, if they get the pure devotee's mercy, they will come to me at last. Because actually, not to be proud, most of us, or almost all of us, will not say we are devotees. We are aspiring. We are trying to be. We like the philosophy. We are trying to put faith in it. We are trying to associate with devotees. We are trying to do. No, we are still in the process, trying to muster whatever sincerity we've got. So in trying to follow these principles, oh yes. Yes, in different places, Krishna has said that He is the source of everything. In Bhagavad Gita, in the first of the four seed verses, he says, "No, aham bhakta, no, sorry, aham sarvasta prabhavo, matam sarvam pravartate." So, both the spiritual world and the material world, everything emanates from me, right? Then, what is the second step of? Iti matva bhajante man buddha bhava samanvitaha. So the wise, those who know, those who have realized, are those who know and have realized that everything emanates from Krishna. He says, aham, everything emanates from me. Those who realize this, what do? They engage. They engage in his loving devotional service. That's what they do. So now, and Krishna also says, O Dhananjaya, O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. He says, Mata parataram nanyat kaschit asti Dhananjaya. Everything rests upon me as though strung on a thread. You've seen, if you take out a string of pearls, right, that thread is like Krishna, he's the foundation. Everything is resting upon him. So he is the final word. He is the final word. Right? So this Brahma Jyoti, Krishna says also in the Bhagavad Gita that the Brahma Jyoti, right, this impersonal form, is also emanating from him. In 14:27, Vrajahari Prabhu tells me that this is one of the most misinterpreted verses. Yes? I mean, not by us, but by many so-called translators of the Bhagavad Gita. So what does 4:27 say? It is the last verse of chapter 14. Brahmano hi pratishtaham amritas yavya vasya cha sasvatasya cha dharmasya sukasyaikantikasya cha. Translation: and I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. So Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita that this impersonal form, that he already says is lower. Worshipping the impersonal form is lower than worshipping the personal form. And Krishna says that this impersonal form is also emanating from me. Right? So that fits in with Prabhupada's example of the glow from the bodies of those in the sun planet, who are already made of fire. So automatically glow is there. Similarly, Krishna's planet is always glowing. Right there. So that is the glow, that is the impersonal form that many people see as the absolute. It's just another conception of the absolute truth. It is not that it doesn't exist. Right. So basically, there is another verse. In the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 14, this is just when we read Vritasura's prayers just now, right? So we saw how, based on his prayers, we have an idea how great a personality he is. So Parikshit Maharaj is asking, how come a demon like that has such godly or such devotee qualities? That's what this chapter covers. Yes. So just like, I forgot to read chapter 7, text 3. That's right. The rarity of pure devotional service, or the rarity of finding a real devotee, or rather one who knows Krishna in truth. Manushyanam sahasreshu, that means out of thousands of men, manushyanam sahasreshu, kaschit yatati siddhaye, of thousands of men, one may, not definitely, not one in a thousand, but one may. So may or may not, right? Out of thousand, one may endeavor to find out what is the absolute truth. That means ask certain questions when they get their human form of life. One may ask. Most of us are just happy trying to enjoy or give enjoyment to our bodies in different ways. So out of thousands of men, maybe one may be interested in finding out or endeavoring to find out about the absolute truth. And yatatam api siddhanam, of those who are perfected in doing so, or those who are endeavoring to do so, right? Of those, hardly one kaschin mam leti tatvita, hardly one knows me in truth, hardly one knows Krishna in truth. Knowing, many of us, even many know Krishna. Yes, I know Krishna. Sometimes some devotees, when they show, especially Indians, you know, when we show, this is a book about Krishna. Yeah, I know. So, and actually, when I thought about it, actually, I would have said the same thing. Right, or most of us would have said the same thing, right? Because we have grown up, you know, and if someone tells this is Krishna, I know this is Krishna, I know. So, but that means I'm not impressed with you telling me it's Krishna. Tell me something I don't know, right? So that's needed. So, you know, sometimes we have to pray to Krishna to let us tell something that will, you know, different people will get attracted by different things. So if we are able to say that right thing, you know, by Krishna's inspiration, so we have to beg Krishna's mercy, we have to be dependent on Krishna to say that thing. So if we are crying for Krishna's mercy to be able, you know, to ask him to be an instrument to say that thing, so that that person has some attraction, instead of just saying, you know, I know. So that's the thing, you know, someone would have said something to us or offered us something else that made us come here. Right. So similarly, this is something that we also have to pray to Krishna, ask Krishna to help us, you know, or rather beg for Krishna's mercy, that we'll be able to say something that may inspire someone to come to the programs or to read our books, you know, things like this. So it is very rare. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and for those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So again, Krishna in 6th canto, chapter 14, the same thing is said. O best among the Brahmanas, Sukadev Goswami, out of many persons who follow religious principles, only a few desire liberation from the material world. Among many thousands who desire liberation, one may actually achieve liberation. Giving up material attachment to society, friendship, love, country, home, wife and children. And among many thousands of such liberated persons, one who can understand the true meaning of liberation is very rare. So many of us, many who have taken to the impersonal conception of God, many of them, many transcendentalists, not religionists, not those who are after religion, but those who are transcendentalists, many of them are actually frustrated in life. Frustrated because, you know, what this material body is giving them, so much problems, they have realized so much that with this material body there is so much problem, so they want out. So, the type of the type of sukha, the type of joy that they are looking for is basically to remove the suffering that they are experiencing here. You know, many a times, okay, in this material world, the so-called enjoyment that we are experiencing here in this material world is actually, we may think it is enjoyment, this is due to illusion, but in actual fact it is not enjoyment, it is actually a negation of our suffering. We are actually always on the constantly suffering, and then when there is a blip, suddenly when there is a reduction of suffering, that reduction, depending on the how severe the reduction is, we think that is the intensity of happiness. You follow what I'm saying? For example, we may be working day and night, you know, very trying to meet deadlines or whatever, you know, meet, whether in the restaurant or whether in the road under the hot sun. Then they are thinking, oh, this Sunday I'll have a birthday party with my son. So they are all looking forward to that birthday party. But all this while they are suffering, and on that day the suffering just reduces. Am I right? So the suffering reduces on that day, but we are fooled to believe. Not the sadhus say we are fools, but you know, that's the reality of it. We think that's actually happiness, but actually that is just a reduction of the suffering that we are going through. See, basically, you know, initially I said we are going through birth. Now, nobody likes death, nobody likes to die, nobody is looking forward to death. Everyone is trying to prolong their lives. Nobody is looking forward to diseases come. Now we've got this latest flu that's going around. So nobody actually wants to be infected, but somehow or other the number is just increasing by the day, right? So death, old age, and nobody wants to grow old, but we are all forced to become old. Nobody is going to the temples. Now all, I think almost all are Indians here. Many of us go to the temple. We go to the temple, never have we asked that, no, please make me grow old. No, I want to grow old. I can't wait to be a 60-year-old man, 65-year-old man, so that my knees and all my joints will ache. Nobody's asking. But these things come automatically to us, right? These things come automatically. And all the other sufferings are also coming automatically. We did not ask for it. But so, and when on one day when we have a laugh, when we read a comedy or when we see some comedy on the TV, or when we share a joke, we think that is actually giving us joy. Actually, that is just a negation of the suffering that we are going through. So the dhyani is those who are worshipping the impersonal aspect of the supreme absolute truth. They actually want out. They just want no more. They don't want any more suffering. That means they want to be out of this material body. Once they are out of this material body and not get another material body by merging into this light, then they won't have a material body. If you don't have material body, then you do not have to suffer these four things. Only if you have a material body do you have to go through these things. If you do not have a body, where is there suffering? These sufferings will not be there. So their concept of happiness is negation of unhappiness, negation of distress. That's their conception of happiness, right? But in actuality, real happiness means going beyond that. That means if you draw a graph, you are just at zero. You are just at point zero, whereby all that suffering that you've been experiencing, it has come to zero. That's the Brahman realization. When there is Bhagavan realization, there is so much variegatedness, there is so much reciprocation that you can have. This is discussed in our gathering. How Krishna has loving relationships with his devotees there, this loving relationships that between the bhakta and Bhagavan, this is so sweet, and this gives so much joy to hear and to take part in it. Let me finish here, one more. So it continues, O great sage, among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayan or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are extremely rare. So it is not a surprise that devotees of Krishna are very rare. Devotees who have understood Krishna in truth are very, very rare. It's not a surprise. Krishna says in different places. In Bhagavad Gita he says, in Srimad Bhagavatam, and he says the same thing. This one other thing that I wanted to discuss about the mentalities of different types of men and the transcendentalists. You have four different types of men. The bogis, the tyagis, the bhaktas. Right? So, the karmis are the bogis. When we say karmis means they can be gross materialists. That means all they know is how to give pleasure to their senses. Right? They do not know anything above than that. Then there are those who are karmis, who are religionists. That means they follow Shastra, they want enjoyment, they are also after enjoyment for their material body, either to enjoy currently or in subsequent lives. They follow, more than 90% of our Vedic scriptures actually prescribe things that we can do in order to get a body, or in order to get bodies to enjoy, or in order to seek some enjoyment in the heavenly planets, things like that. More than 90% of Shastra deals with that. So it is not surprising that many are attracted to these things. Right? It's not surprising. 90% are thanks to Srimad Vyasadeva. Well, that's because the mentality of the conditioned souls are like that. So, but by doing so, at least slowly, they at least have accepted that there is a higher being, and they have to accept these rules and regulations. Slowly they're getting some purifications. Better than the first kind of karmis who can't be bothered. They only see their gross materialists, they only think how to gratify my sense, or how to gratify my body and my extended relations. So, that means everything they see around them, they say that it is meant for them to enjoy. So then you have the tyagis, the jnanis. The jnanis, that means those who are fed up. They're basically fed up. They are fed up with fed up here because so much frustration because of their body, so much suffering is being, they can realize. No, actually they are lucky. Most of us, even as practicing devotees, we've not even realized that, this body is giving us so much suffering. We are still so much attached to this body. But the only saving grace, is we have some attraction towards this Krishna consciousness, and we have some faith, and we are trying to go, trying to hear and engage in devotional service so that we become purified and realize this fact that we are actually suffering. What's that? Anatto pashamam sakshat bhakti yoga madokshate lokasya janato vidvam chakre tattva sanghitam. This is in Srimad Bhagavatam. It says, the living entities are actually suffering in this material world, and that this suffering is superfluous to us. That, Prabhupada says, living in a fool's paradise. So, sometimes I've asked, devotees sometimes, especially in the West, or those who have realized, maybe especially the Russians, I find them quite amazing in terms of their realization. They say, Prabhu, so do you think, do you think you're suffering? It's like, I take a long time to answer that question because deep inside, not really suffering, I'm okay, I've got a job, I've got a nice roof over my head, and, money is coming in, everything is alright. So, this is called superfluous. I'm suffering and I actually do not know. And here I am telling everyone we are suffering. Quite a joke, isn't it? So, sad. But we are trying. Hare Krishna. So, okay, about these Tyagis, they are giving up, they want to give up. No, this is material, I don't want, this is material, I don't want. Everything they are giving up. Okay, let's see this, both these mentalities in terms of what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita and Upanishad. Krishna says in 5:29, right, what does he say? Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. What does that mean? That means Sarva, I mean, try and translate it in Tamil or whatever, and it's quite straightforward. Sarva, Sarva Loka. No, not too much, not too difficult, is it? Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. Is it too difficult? Right? I'm sure everyone got the meaning, yes? That means he's saying he's all Loka. Of all Lokas, he is the Maheshwara. He is the supreme proprietor of all Lokas. All Lokas include earth, doesn't it? And I'm sure it also includes everything until the speck of dust on the earth. Am I right? Right? Yes. So now you have the bogies who want to take this person's property and enjoy for themselves. Right? So is he a thief or what? You follow what I'm saying? See, we don't realize these things, you know. No, it's not, you know, like if you have some property and I take Haribo, it's mine, right? So now Krishna is, you know, Krishna comes to the Gita like this, he's not telling us every day Haribo, you know what are you doing? So Shastra tells us and also Sadhu tells us. Shastra and Sadhu tell us that actually everything belongs to him, and we have the audacity to encroach his property and say this is mine, and then go to the lawyer's office and get it endorsed. No, this belongs to so and so. You know, in India and in many countries they have this principle: after you've encroached a property for some years, it's no longer yours, Baba. It's mine. Right? As long as you stay on some property belonging to someone else for some period of time, the law actually says that's yours, you can keep it. Right? Doesn't work for Krishna's property. Or at least the law hasn't come up yet. Right? So the bogies are thinking, oh, someone else's property I will enjoy. It's more funny when you think about what the Tyagis are doing. The Jnanis. You know, they say, oh, this I don't want, I'll renounce this, I'll renounce my wife, I'll renounce my house, everything renounce. Hey! Is it yours in the first place to renounce? Right? We just heard, you know, and also in Upanishad, Isha Vasa Vidam Sarvam, everything belongs to Isha, everything belongs to the Supreme. So, if you want to renounce, renounce your wife, renounce your car, renounce this, that, but is it ours in the first place to renounce? Right? Even so, coming back to the bogies, you know, Prabhupada gives very nice example, you know, you have rogues, thieves. Rogues, you know, thieves go and steal so many, go to a house and rob a full house, so much gold, you know, the lady is a walking jewelry shop. That's his word. His phrase. The lady, you know, we've seen that lady, she's a walking jewelry shop, she goes to, you know, the wedding program, and yes, we go to that house, we take the loot. The wedding shop, the jewelry shop is in our hands now. And we go back and then suddenly we say, hey, guess what? Okay, all of us must be moral in dividing this, okay? What did we just do? So that's us, you know. We try and take Krishna's property, and then, you know, then the government say, okay, now we morally distribute them. Okay, this is for Raja Hari Prabhu, 18 cents, 1 acre for Shah Prabhu. Right? So this is what we are doing. We are stealing someone else's property, right? And then morally distributing it according to common law, according to, you know, some concocted law that we have come up with. Right, yeah, I mean it's funny, but this is a fact, you know. Right, I mean we can laugh about it, but we are all guilty of it, remember. Think about it, you know. So there's a story that Prabhupada relates of Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great is also a great rogue, great thief, yeah, he's a great thief. And once, you know, one of his lieutenants told, hey, we've got a thief among in our company. So Get in here. So the thief, you know, he may have stole some, you know, small one coin or something. One small coin or something he may have stolen. Then the thief was summoned and he came and he said, I'm going to punish you. Okay. Then he said, yeah, but for what? For stealing from me. But my Lord, you have stolen from so many people, from big nations you have stolen, and you have stolen such a big amount, and I have stolen a small thing, and you are going to punish me for stealing a small thing. Then that made him realize. So that made Alexander the Great realize that, you know, what is he saying? Right? We are talking about decency among thieves. When is there decency among thieves? I mean, this we see, you know, in the old mafia stories, you know. You know, they are all mafia. They, you know, outside they are killing people, you know, point blank. But when they come to their own sangha, right, when they have their own association, every Saturday program, and they kiss each other's hands and whatnot, then, wow, there is some rank and file, and, you know, you must pay obeisances. You know, they have different ways of doing that. And then everything must be fucked up. But what are they doing outside? Same thing we are doing. So Srila Prabhupada says all rogues. Whether as a nation rogue. America. The white people from different places went to America. They got all the red Indians there. Right? Then now, all of you Indians, if you want to go there, including me, sorry, all of us Indians, if you want to go there, where's your immigration, Baba? As if it was there in the first place. Right? That's what's happening. Isn't it? So I just want to highlight the mentality of the bogis and the tyagis, the gyanis. The gyanis are what this today's verse is about. Okay, just before I close, I like to relate one nice pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Sanatan Goswami about this tyaga issue. Actually, there was another thing. There is also another story which I won't tell about. You need the mercy of Krishna or his devotees in order to be able to realize that Krishna is actually the supreme. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, or the absolute truth actually has a form, and you start doing devotional service. And this was the story of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Mahaprabhu. So I'll not go into that. There's another one about this tyagi issue. This gyani is their mentality. Sanatan Goswami is not the tyagi, right? But I'll just take 5 minutes and we'll close, okay? So just hear me. Just hear me out for a while. Just hear, please. This is from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I'll give you some background. Sanatan Goswami, he goes to Jagannath Puri to meet Mahaprabhu. And he is also, you know, because of his pangs of separation from Krishna, he actually felt like committing suicide. But his body is suffering so much, and he's feeling so much pangs of separation from Krishna, and he felt, you know, he just wanted to give up his life. He wanted to go and give up his life in the Bay of Bengal, you know, in Jagannath Puri. So he had not disclosed this to anyone yet. So on one occasion, when Mahaprabhu met Sanatan Goswami, this is the conversation that took place. One day, while meeting these two devotees, Haridas Thakur and Sanatan Goswami, the Lord suddenly spoke as follows. My dear Sanatan, if I could attain Krishna by committing suicide, then I would gladly give up millions of bodies without a moment's hesitation. However, you should know that one cannot achieve Krishna merely by giving up his material body. So he says, you know, if Krishna can be obtained by giving up the body, then I would have done it. I would have given up my body hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. That's what they are willing to do. Anything, you know, if I can just get Krishna by doing this, he's willing to do it. So he said, if that is so, I would have done it. But, no. The awakening of one's dormant love for Krishna is the only means of attaining Him. Only if we awaken our love for Him. And such ecstatic love is invoked only by the process of devotional service. So, only this way, only in devotional service, only that way we will be able to get Krishna. And not by any other means. Acts such as suicide are impelled by the mode of ignorance and are sinful. As long as one is under the influence of the modes of passion and ignorance, it is not possible to understand Krishna. It is a fact that due to feelings of separation from Krishna, an exalted devotee sometimes desires to give up his life. However, by such ecstatic love, he attains Krishna's audience, and thus the devotee cannot give up the body. My dear Sanatan, give up your nonsensical desire, for it is unfavorable for gaining shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Just engage yourself in hearing and chanting, for then you shall soon achieve Krishna's shelter without a doubt. A person born in a low family is not unfit for discharging devotional service, nor is one fit to render devotional service simply because of being born in an aristocratic family of Brahmanas. So, your birth doesn't matter. You can be from, because all, everyone, whether you are from Africa, whether you are from China, whether you are from Australia, whether you are from America, whether you are from India, all are God's children. All have the eligibility to engage in devotional service. Sanatana Goswami was exceedingly astonished to hear Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speak like this. He thought, the Lord, who is the knower of everything, past, present and future, has not approved of my decision to commit suicide, and thus He has forbidden me to do so. Sanatana Goswami fell to the ground, and after touching the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, my Lord, you are the omniscient, merciful, supreme personality of Godhead. Exactly like a wooden doll, I dance as you make me. I am not only low-born, but am the most condemned person. For I have all the characteristics of a sinful man. If you keep me alive, what is the profit? So he's asking Mahaprabhu, no, why keep me alive? What profit will you get? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, listen, as Charachandra Prabhu would say, Tachunu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, your body is my property. You have already surrendered to me, and thus you no longer have any claim of property. Thus you no longer have any claim of proprietorship over your body. Why do you want to destroy another's property? You understand what I'm saying? Sorry. No, it is not even yours. And you want to renounce it. That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying. Right? It is not yours. This body is not yours. This body belongs to your spiritual master. It's not yours. It is meant to be used as he deems fit, not as you deem fit. Not only you knew. Just to create dramatic effect. Right? Your body is my property. You have already surrendered to me, and thus you no longer have any claim of proprietorship over your body. Why do you want to destroy another's property? Can't you consider what is right and what is wrong? Your body is my principal instrument. So this is, Krishna wants to make use of his body. He has plans for that body. He has plans for Sanatana Goswami's body. What is that? What are those plans? Your body is my principal instrument for executing many necessary functions. You will have to ascertain and explain the basic principles of devotional service and the characteristics of a devotee. This he has written the book called Hari Bhakti Vilas. Then, In addition, you will have to establish centers for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, or to set up temples, to set up centers. Like, you know, this is still going on. Under Srila Prabhupada's direction, it is still going on. This center, these programs are going on. For whose benefit? Not for our benefit. Yes, for our benefit also, true. But to give a chance to everyone to come and hear about Krishna. The more and more we hear about Krishna, only then we will develop some attraction towards Him. If we do not know about Krishna, I mean, if it's an NGR's case, or with, you know, the various NGR or, you know, Shah Rukh Khan, how did you develop attraction? You may have seen the person once, but after you buy all these magazines on a daily basis for entertainment today, entertainment this week, entertainment tonight, entertainment this month, you know, all this so-called entertainment series that comes on TVs, we watch and we find, oh, this is his birthday, oh, he has just done this, he has done that. So as we hear more and more about that person, we develop more and more attraction towards that person, do we not? Similarly, by coming here, by hearing about Krishna, that's what happens. And as you hear more and more and more, what's going to happen is our priorities in life will change. I'm not scaring you. But this is the purpose why this International Society for Krishna Consciousness has been set up, and so many temples and centers are being set up, so that people, masses can come and hear about Krishna, and slowly their priorities in life, if they are sincere, come and hear, their priorities in life will change. Now they are only after what will give my body happiness. They are not interested, who is God, I don't care. And or rather, I'm ignorant of. So as you know, there is a God. Who is He? Who am I to Him? What is my relationship? And what do I have to do? Understanding that relationship, the more we understand that, and we understand all the glorious pastimes of Krishna, and how He deals with His devotees, how the devotees deal with Krishna, how the devotees are so, they are tireless in wanting to serve Krishna, and Krishna reciprocates. It's not like that, yeah, what about that? That's that, you've not, what about that? Or what about that? You've not seen that. No, it's not like that. Krishna also wants to serve His devotees, and it's not that we want Krishna to serve us. That's the loving relationship. As we hear more and more and more, our hearts, which are so hard, Sila Tanka, not so hard, it will slowly melt by hearing about Krishna. Then, and slowly, by this purification, we become, our priorities in life will slowly change. Give it a chance. Come and hear about Krishna Katha. Spend your time. Come and hear about Krishna. That's the first process. And when you hear, go home, contemplate the instructions that are given, or the things that are spoken. Contemplate on them. Try and infuse them in our own lives and see if it makes a difference. That we should all do. That's why we are coming. So we don't encourage people, you know, us talking during the class, and when we are singing, sing, don't talk. Do all these things and see. You see for yourself if there is a difference. Go, do for a few months, do for 6-7 months. No, just engage in just, I just want to hear what the person has to say. If he comes and says, Krishna is in the heart, Krishna is in the heart of everyone. Krishna may inspire the person who is a murkha, who is a fool, to speak something to you because you have come here sincerely wanting to hear something about Krishna. You understand what I'm saying? So it is not that the person, no, I may be a murkha, but if you have come sincerely, Krishna will speak through you, that nobody else may have understood, but something that you wanted to find out may have been answered. Maybe answer. That's the whole thing about Paramatma in the heart. That's the whole thing about Krishna. That's the magic of Krishna. That will happen. Don't you want that? So if we are sincere, Prabhupada always tell us, know that we have to be sincere. If we are sincere, something will happen. We will see some reciprocation. You try yourselves. Yeah. Just two more paragraphs. Actually, I'm finished. Yeah. So in addition, you will have to establish centers for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, excavate the forgotten places of pilgrimage, and teach people how to properly accept the renounced order of life. outside. So basically, you know, this Tyaga principle that, you know, that the Jnanis have, you know, they are rejecting everything. Actually, they are saying, Maya, 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 this is Maya, this is Maya, this is Maya, this is Maya, everything is Maya. But the devotees say what? They say everything, this is related to Krishna, this is to Krishna, this is related to Krishna, he sees everything, you know, Krishna, 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 that's the difference. The devotee sees everything in relation to Krishna. The Jnani sees Maya. Whoa. Maya means what actually? Maya means false, not real, not real. Not real means what? Not real as in it's temporary. That's the meaning of not real. It's not that, you know, if it's really not real, then, you know, I can be slapping you on your face and you can just imagine, oh, he's just taking a rose petal and hitting me on my cheek. That's not the case, correct? Hitting me, God, I'll hit and you'll feel pain. But the only thing is, everything is temporary. That's the Maya that's here. So, for the Jnanis, it's everything Maya, Maya, Maya. But the devotees, they see Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. They see everything and relation, they see relationship with Krishna. Krishna servant, Shah is the Krishna servant. Yare Prabhu is Krishna servant. All are Krishna servants. So, my wife is Krishna servant, my child is Krishna servant, all Krishna servants. This mic is belong property of Krishna, he says, right? So all this to be used for Krishna. So I do not go into this giving up attitude. Instead, that is a term we call Yukta Vairagya. So whatever there is belongs to Krishna and to be used for Krishna. Hare Krishna. Fine. Thank you very much.
I have questions about the verse.
Prabhuji, thank you so much for a very refreshing way of looking at this verse, Prabhuji. It is very easy to make this verse impersonal because it speaks really on how difficult it is to become personal. And what I found very nice about this point is Prabhuji made special mention on the fact that it is really not our place to condemn or to judge the different aspects of transcendence, or more importantly, to judge the practitioners who may realize the different aspects of transcendence. Sometimes as devotees, when we read Prabhupada's purports, especially on the sections where Prabhupada appears to be heavy on Mayavadi philosophy, impersonal realization, Paramatma realization, we suddenly may falsely assume the role of Acharya and decide that this is the route we must take, and therefore we go around smashing everyone thinking that we have actually come to that point. But we forget that, we also forget to realize that Prabhupada has never ever stated that the impersonal realization of the Lord is not on the transcendental platform. So sometimes there is a very unfortunate mistake that devotees can make, and very often that has cost us very bad relations with the masses and the public, and it has given very bad misconception of who we are as devotees. A devotee doesn't have to put someone down to glorify Krishna. Glorification of Krishna stands on its own. And impersonal realization is also an aspect of the Absolute. So this point that you have mentioned is very, very important because it is very practical also. And very often, even as devotees, my Guru Maharaj, this time I just heard him also, and he was saying, even as devotees, we are actually disguised impersonalists. Because as you said, we are aspiring to be devotees. But actually in our dealings, we are very impersonal with each other. Very often we don't have loving relations with each other. Yet we speak about bhakti, but we have no practical understanding that bhakti should be, that we should be loving with each other. Sometimes it is our practical experience even that the so-called impersonalist has more decent relation and methods of dealing with the personalities of the world than sometimes even aspiring devotees. So we should be very, very careful that we should not take what we want to suit us in Prabhupada's purport, because Prabhupada's purport are absolute. So everything should be viewed in proper context, in time, place and circumstance. So this point you said is very nice for me. The other thing I wanted to share with the devotees also is one thing that I always remember Prabhupada saying, when the devotees did ask Prabhupada, if the impersonal realization is transcendental, then what's wrong with it? You know, there's nothing wrong with it. And Prabhupada said, yes, there's nothing wrong with it. And then he would pause and he would think, and then he described it very practically. He just said that they just become bored after a while. B-O-R-E-D, you know, they just become bored. Because as Prabhuji said, how long can we go on in this world negating things? You know, how long can we go on negating? This is not neti neti, that famous concept that Sankaracharya spoke. You know, neti neti neti. This is not. In the end, we come to a point where what is? If everything is not, then what is? And then we'll say that which is not is. But again, we don't really have a practical point on it. So that is why devotees are encouraged. Devotional service should be practical. It must be such that this process must be able to, in the morning when we wake up, we know what to do. We know how to relate. We may not realize, but at least we know. And that is very useful. Prabhupada gave this story of the thread and the blanket. Some of us have heard it, but it's good to hear it also. Prabhupada said that one time there was this group of transcendentalists who were going for pilgrimage. And there was the bhakta, and there was this jnani, who believed that God should be seen to be formless. So in the night, you know, in Himalayas it's very cold. So they were seated together around the fire, and they started discussing some philosophy. So this jnani started saying that you speak of being bhakta, but do you realize that the object of your worship and you are one and the same? You know, it's just like if you break a pot which contains air in it, if you break it midway in the space, the air in the pot and the air outside becomes one and the same. So therefore, that is the highest realization. Then the bhakta said, no, actually there is one way of understanding that you are part and parcel of the entire surrounding. But then what after that? What do you do after that? So he said, the sastras tell us that we are actually there to serve the Lord. We may be same in terms of quality, but we'll never be the same in terms of quantity. If there is no service, then there is no engagement. And then the bhakta said, Krishna's relation with us is like this. We are seated on a tree, and he described the famous scene, you know, that we have in Bhagavad Gita, that the witness, he is the supreme witness, he witnesses us in the heart, but at the same time, if we cry out to him, he reciprocates with us, and that becomes our dealings with him. Then the jnani said, no, the analogy may be correct, but actually, the bird that is on the tree, together with the other bird, when they fly up, they don't know which tree or which branch they sat on, and therefore they came from the same place. And this is our problem. We don't realize that we are one and the same. So finally, you know, night was coming and both had to retire. So the bhakta and the jnani realized that between them, they only had one blanket. So it was getting very cold. So bhakta told the jnani, you do one thing now. You really understand and accept that the one supreme is in everything. He said, yes, that's the key. And that's the point I'm trying to tell you. So he said, alright, this blanket I have, right, what is it made up of? So jnani said, there, it's a good point for me to make you understand. This blanket actually is made up only of fibers. It's only fabric. It's running. In Bhagavatam it is known as Otam Protam. That's actually Krishna. Otam Protam. Horizontal and vertical. And he said that if you take one piece of this, it is equal to the whole blanket. And the blanket is actually made of this. So he said, then you have practically realized there's no difference between the thread and the blanket. Jnani said, absolutely, my friend. That's the point. So then the bhakta said, good. I'm going to sleep. It's very cold. I don't know your realization. I'll take the blanket. You keep the thread. By keeping the thread, you have realized you will not feel cold. Jnani said, yeah, that's correct, but he didn't sound so convinced now. 2 hours later, the story goes. The jnani wakes up and he comes and calls bhakta, excuse me Prabhu, if you don't mind, can I share the blanket with you? So bhakta said, what happened? He said, well, you know, it's nice to talk about it, but finally I'm still feeling a bit cold, you know. So Prabhupada used this illustration to tell us that it is not Jnani's fault or Bhakta putting the Jnani down. But at the end of the day, whatever we should do to change our lives today must be on the practical plane. If we have heard so much and we cannot change our lives, then we'll keep hearing. But if there is no change to what we are doing, then it becomes simply a waste of time. It may sound very nice as an armchair speculation, but at the end of the day, on the ground, what are we doing to change the value of our lives? That's the difference between boredom and actual realization of transcendence. So just wanted to share with you. Thank you.
On the first point, you know, this arrogance, pride is one of the demonic qualities, correct? So, I admit, others also I don't know about the others, okay? Arrogance is something, arrogance and pride is something many of us have, when we introspect, it's very easy to find out, yeah, so much in me. And what are we being presented with? The highest philosophy available. So obviously, and you're a nobody. You walk into a place after a few months, and you realize, oh, I've been hearing the highest philosophy. Naturally, it will only make us so proud, and we can't wait to go out and hit anyone and everyone we know. So these constant reminders are required. Otherwise, no. Anyone else?
You think one more? Martin? Questions?
Thank you for such an answer. I just had this thing in mind. They speak so much about Brahman and Paramatma and the topmost realization of God as a Bhagavan. And actually people who are behind Brahman or Paramatma, they have so many abilities, yogis, they can have all these siddhis. And we are trying to worship God, but we don't have any abilities. So actually in one it appears that actually they are superior than us. And we say that mukti is a part of bhakti. If that is the case, that then why not the devotee should have all these abilities that is helping preaching us. That will help in preaching us all this if we can do it like yogis. Flying around and all that.
So Prabhu is asking why. He first stated that the yogis and the jnanis, they have many abilities. Like the jnanis are very big scholars. They can sit with you for a long time and just mesh every single point you make, you bring up, they can smash it, right? If you're not strong in Shastra yourself. And the yogis, what can I say? The magicians, they got so many siddhis, right? So he's saying, if we also had these powers, right, wouldn't it be easier to attract people, right, to this path of Krishna consciousness? So that's the...
We would forget. We would forget.
Yeah. So, correct. So actually, the problem, actually even the jnanis and the yogis, they are actually heading towards Krishna. They started to find out the absolute truth. Remember that. Just like the bhaktas, we are trying to find out that we are also on the path of finding out what is the absolute truth and what we are supposed to do. They are doing the same thing. But the problem is, when all these powers come, maybe I am God, So they get stuck. So this is what happens to them. So similarly, then the jnanis will say, actually I am God. Actually I find it so difficult to understand how I can be God and suffering like that. I cannot understand. So I leave that aside. I have difficulty. But with the yogis, it's very easy. You have people like well, even you know, magicians like you know what David Copperfield now that you know they have superlative magical skill, right? But let's say you know fall into the wrong hands, most likely you know the general tendency once you have some power, then you can't wait to show this power to everybody to get a penny or two. You are no longer interested in going after the absolute truth. And the worst thing, if you go to a poor country, everybody worships you as God. So and then you become stuck to that. So that is why many people who take this path usually stop. They think the highest is the city is the highest. They forget that they actually started in the first place to find God. Right? So that's what happened. So similarly, this is not what is expected. This is the devotees are not after that. And the devotees are leaving it to Krishna whether someone gets inspired or not. They just want to be an instrument. They are not after any power. They just want to be an instrument. Whatever the Lord wills, I want to do. I just want to be a puppet in the Lord's hand. How He uses me, I don't care. If He uses me in such a way that He gives me power, like Prabhupada, you know, sometimes we think, we say, Prabhupada can see the future, can see everything, so that means I can see through you. Ah, you're thinking of this, yeah. Prabhupada said, if Krishna wants me to know, that means, let's say you've done something wrong, then if Prabhupada said, if Krishna wants me to know, I will know. That's all. That means if Krishna wants me, if He so desires that I should know that you have this problem, or you have done this, then somehow or other, I don't know. So that's the city that they have. So if they are just dependent on Krishna. If Krishna wants him to have that city, okay, if he wants, I will take. Not for my personal use. For service to Krishna, if Krishna gives, I will use it. We do not aspire for it separately. That's all the answer I can give to you. We will stop here. See? Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Jai Gaur Premanandi.
Jai
Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai.